Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
I can also confirm 100% that there's so much news in the NFL, and it's not coming from gameplay. Jhené Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Jhené Angola McKay, Mike Golick Jr. here with you. And first up, according to our own ESPN NFL insider, Adam Schefter, Antonio Brown's suspension, based on, you know, the multiple violations of the league's personal conduct policy, is eligible to end after week 8. And the Seahawks are one of the teams targeting him. Now, next in the lineup, the Las Vegas Raiders have placed starting offensive tackle Trent Brown on the COVID reserve list. And as a precaution, head coach John Gruden sent home all 5 of its starting offensive linemen home because they were in contact with Trent Brown. And now, in a few minutes, we will continue that conversation because in the same breath, we're getting news about a certain stadium choosing to increase their capacity for fans in the middle of a pandemic. So a lot of news from the NFL. And we're not even talking about football.
It's amazing, Jhené. Like, we were getting ready to start the show, and all of a sudden I look up and I see Antonio Brown's face, which I could have done without in a number of reasons. But to see this, and we talked to Laura Rutledge before, it's worth noting, when we heard that 8-game suspension, a lot of people weren't sure if that was going to apply when a team signed Antonio Brown. If someone took that chance, would you have to then wait 8 games to get him? And so now the league ruling that suspension, no, will just last through the first 8 weeks of this season. We knew with his talent someone was going to sign him, and the Seahawks, they're in that Patriot position now with the way that offense is operated and with the way DK Metcalf has developed next to all the weapons they already have in Tyler Lockett, to say, all right, this can be a low-risk, high-reward situation for us, because as you pointed out earlier, right now he needs them a lot more than they need him.
Absolutely. And you know what's interesting here is that, you know, as the seasons progress, the need for players will just keep going up, because they're not dealing with just injuries. They're dealing with health situations in which players are not going to be available. And so if he's not playing, he is essentially serving his time. And so I do think he deserves, you know, I don't know, you know, he should have an opportunity if it's presented.
Deserves is a tough word. It's a loaded word, because like, we don't know if he's done anything behind closed doors to better himself during this time based on what we've seen from him last. Only the team doing their homework to potentially bring him on board. But you brought up a great point. In this season right now, where you just mentioned the Raiders had to send their whole offensive line home. They just beat the Chiefs, and now they're dealing with all of this. The Tennessee Titans had to take an extended break in all of this. The Patriots have gotten hit by this more. Like, you never know what's going to affect another team and the opportunity to potentially win a championship this year if you're the team that can stay healthiest and bolster yourself with this kind of talent has never been more, I think, prominent than it is right now.
Exactly. You can be riding high 1 week, and I think the Raiders are a great example of this, and then the next week you're dealing with something outside of your control, but I think it's smart to get ahead of it and send everyone home and just be safe. But one of my favorite things that you have said, which is a Remember the Titans quote, is attitude reflect leadership. Did I do it well?
Oh, yeah, you did. You got to throw the captain in at the end of that one. Really, like, punctuate at home.
Attitude reflect leadership. Captain, there you go. Well, today we're all talking about communication and leadership, because in all of these situations, how things are communicated, whether it's health situations and making sure that leadership is there, as we've seen with Coach Gruden sending his players home just as a precautionary measure. We see the attitudes forming in Dallas where there is a lack of leadership just because your quarterback is unavailable and then a number of guys go down to injury. And then now you're in Miami where, you know, Tua Tagovailoa has been named the starter, which is great news for Tua. But then you're in a locker room where the way that was communicated is now creating a bigger issue for your team.
Yeah, and Jhené, these are both interesting examples of communication, because what's the one hallmark of any team that anyone's a part of? And Mike McCarthy's addressed the comments that were made by anonymous players and, you know, intimated a lot of things that we're used to, saying it to each other man-to-man. These are anonymous quotes. The general thought is, I want to hear it from you. If there's something going on with our team, I want to hear it from you. In the case of Tua and the Dolphins, if I'm Ryan Fitzpatrick, if I'm the rest of this team, I don't want to find out from the media. I want to hear it from Brian Flores. We're making a decision, and here's why. Because I might not like what I'm being told, but at least if I'm hearing it directly from you and it's a reason, we are professionals, and this is grown men, grown person sports at the professional level, I can at least then take that information and do what I'm going to, knowing we're all on the same page. So for the Dolphins spot, Jhené, I think this is interesting, and Again, now it puts in a tough position a young player, someone who's in a position you're familiar with, being a team's top overall pick, now trying to manage. I'm trying to go out here and play great football for you in my first career start in the NFL, all while Ryan Fitzpatrick is clearly someone who's been hurt by this news, and the locker room's probably wondering what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And you look at how the news came out, and I think that's what we have the biggest issue with. All right. The media finds out, and maybe it wasn't intentional, like, for the media to directly find out, because Tua got the call, according to what we've heard. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick today sat down and heard face to face, which he felt better about. But again, he said it felt final. Like, you know, after all the great work he's done, it seems like, man, like, I wasn't able to see where that goes. And there's no worse feeling as an athlete, knowing you have stuff in the tank, you have momentum, and then bam, you're stunted from that. So he walking into a locker room, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then also on one side seeing Tua Tagovailoa, like, you have probably young guys happy for him, the guys that he's sort of been working with, plus you have a whole team that's really excited about the momentum. And I mean, I told you a long time ago, I just love watching him play, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and how excited he is for others. How excited, like, how emotional. You don't see so many people get that hyped for any player on the team, Tua included, which is crazy.
When Tua went in, who was the biggest cheerleader on the sideline hyping up the crowd but Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Life comes at you fast and full circle, and I do think it's a tough position. I said it was probably one of the problems you want to have. You want to have Ryan Fitzpatrick step into a situation where he can deliver wins and really teach Tua, and you want Tua to be ready too, but at the same time, the problem was something that you could have controlled by communicating.
Exactly. That's the difficult part in this. Chenea Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, because there's also the dynamic, like, hearing this quote from Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we played sound yesterday from his interview on the Adam Schefter podcast, saying, I'm on borrowed time in this league. I understand I've kind of gotten to live out so many lives in this, more than would be expected from someone with my background. But then you read this quote today on the Dolphins' decision to start Tua. Quote, my heart just hurt all day. It was heartbreaking for me. I've been a starter. I've been benched all kinds of different ways, but this one really just more so than any of them. I just felt like fully committed and invested and felt like it was my team. And so now you're a young roster, and we've hidden in this and highlighted this a number of times. Ryan Fitzpatrick's the only player over 30 on this team.
And he's 37.
Yes. And so it's by a mile, which means he comes in and everyone else is grown up, probably seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick's NFL journey going on all over the course of this. And he's a guy, like you said, that's endeared to this locker room. Chenea, I'll never forget some of the worst days of my life as a freshman at Notre Dame was watching us lose on senior day, because you have a lot of affinity and a lot of love for the upperclassmen, for the leaders on your team that are in those spots, and to see them go out like that hurts everybody. You want to take care of them because they're people that have looked after you. I'm sure on a young team there's some of that same affinity for Ryan Fitzpatrick and what he's meant for this outfit. And so now you've got to quickly process that, because you've got a rookie that needs you to make sure everyone else is doing their job around him just so he can have a chance to play his best ball for you.
I'm sorry, you say so many things that distract me all the time. Did you cry on your senior day?
Oh, so I had two senior days, because I had a regular senior year and I did a fifth year. And I cried like a baby on my regular one, but we were undefeated my fifth year senior year, so I was having a good old time out there on that field.
On my senior day, I was actually lucky, because the last time I played at Maples Pavilion, which is the court at Stanford University, was an opportunity to win in the Elite Eight and go to the Final Four. So I had the best senior day ever. Didn't cry when my sister left.
Really? That was my next question, because that's kind of, I mean, you got the family ties there. Like, I played, my younger brother Jake was a tight end on our team at Notre Dame. He was a year younger, so we got to do kind of the senior day victory lap around the field together. No thug tears when your sister made the final lap, huh?
Yeah, no thug tears, because I knew she was going to go into the WNBA, one. And two, I was like, oh shoot, like, I'm playing without her. I started panicking.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, oh snap, like, she's gone. That means she's like, my role dog is gone. Like, I was like, oh snap, it's on me.
I thought you were gonna be like, she is gone and now it is my time to shine. NECA is out and this is Janae's team now.
No, I was a little shook. I was like, oh snap, like, she's the one who took all my fouls for me. Like, am I gonna stay in the game? To this day, did you know that in the WNBA I usually get most, like, NECA gets most of my fouls and I run away before they realize it?
No. So you're out here just letting your sister take blame for your fouls in these instances.
Absolutely. And then once I went public about it, I started getting fouls, like, fouling out all the time.
So you snitched on yourself.
I did.
Come on, man.
That's what I deserve for not crying on her senior day.
It all comes full circle there. The emotions tied to the players on her team that we love. Going to be a lot for the Dolphins to try and digest here. And they got to turn around in a short amount of time because they've got this bye week to prepare their top overall pick, the quarterback they did all that tanking for, and try and make sure this goes as well as possible because the young roster knows this is the key to their future. This is what they've been getting ready for, and they're going to try and find that out. So we've got that going on in Miami right now. But coming up in New Orleans, we can look at the situation that's going on with the Saints and their stadium and say this. You might be able to do this the right way. We might be getting to the right spot in all of this. We don't have those answers. But coming up next, we're going to get a good reminder of who is driving us to this destination right now because it's not the people that should be. That's next. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
In about 10 minutes, I will... Oh, I missed the beat. Oh, gosh, that never happens for me. What? Oh, let me look. Okay, I'm still melanated. In about 10 minutes, I finally will win the ratio with Junior. Stay, because in a few minutes, you can witness that happening with our next guest. I'm so excited. Chinay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Chinay Ogumake, Mike Golic Jr. Now, back to football. And you know I always love talking about the South because already we had news today that New Orleans Pelicans organization have reached an agreement with Stan Van Gundy as their new head coach. And now the New Orleans Saints have also reached an agreement with the mayor of New Orleans to host fans beginning Sunday with their contest versus the Panthers. Now, season ticket holders will have access to 3,000 tickets for Sunday's game. Previously, the Saints were not allowed to have fans due to the local restrictions about safety regarding the COVID situation, and they have left room for increases because if everything remains stable, 6,000 fans going up from 3,000 to 6,000 would be possible for the games on November 15th and 22nd with a goal of 15,000 by December against the Chiefs and the Vikings, which is, you know, potentially around Christmas Day. How do you feel considering we talked about what's happening with COVID and especially with the Las Vegas Raiders? How do you feel, Junior, about this happening simultaneously as well?
You know what, Chinay? It's one of those situations that I thought about. And in this instance, I am not a health and safety expert in this situation. And I'm very interested to see, as I'm sure a lot of people are, as we've looked at places that have allowed fans back in, what's the instances of community spread look like? Have any of the fears of having people in stadiums, outdoor venues, we know being different from indoor venues like the Superdome or like the Mercedes Dome in New Orleans? But I look at this situation and I say, we might be getting good news on that front. This could be a decision that has the backing of science, that has the backing of health and safety, or is at least shown to be safer at some point. But you know what? We'll never know if that was the reason the decision was made, because we know good and damn well it wasn't the reason that this is happening right now. This is happening because the tail wagged the dog in this instance, because the New Orleans Saints as a team, we heard loudly complaining, whether it was their Twitter account or whether it was anybody involved in that situation, getting mad at Aaron Rodgers hard counting you at home in your own building and saying, well, let's explore maybe playing in Baton Rouge and play at their stadium outdoors, giving any indication to anyone that would listen that this is what we want, and so it should happen. And so I don't know if it's the right or wrong thing. I just know it wasn't made for the reasons that should be making these decisions in the day and age we're in right now.
Yes, and we both agree that 3,000 fans in the stands does not necessarily move the needle financially for a franchise.
No.
6,000. 15,000. Right? So, like, again, that puts into question, why is this really happening, especially in a situation where you want to protect the players? But can we keep it real for a moment, please?
Do it, please.
It's been tough for me. I love football and I'm here for it. Like, I'm all in. I am the most miserable human being ever since Sunday, where I'm 1-5 in my fantasy league and I should have stole one, but I went against Wentz and everybody. Okay. Watching these clips of, you know, fans being together, whether it's college football, it still is tough to see considering what they're fighting against in the moment. And I think that's where you look at different leagues and you see the NBA where the fans were largely virtual or there were family and friends, versus you go to the NFL or even you're watching college football. And I'm glad to see a lot of students with masks and at least trying to social distance. You've seen, like, they've put seats in areas where, okay, you can only stand where there is a seat, where you see 6 feet of separation, which is great. But still, I just feel like these situations, while it might be good for you winning football games, or at least feeling more like football, whatever incentive you want, they may not be best for those fans that support you financially once they leave. And that, to me, is the biggest dilemma.
And that is, that's the whole issue in this, Chinee, is I look at this situation, I go, I don't know what's best for the health and safety in this instance, because I know health and safety ain't making these decisions. Like, when we heard Dan Mullen talking about packing the swamp before Florida had to shut down their program, that had nothing to do with health and safety and everything to do with them taking an L at College Station and feeling some type of way about it. So the decision makers in this process aren't who they should be. And so anytime people want to claim something about how well this is all going or what we're showing we can do safely, we're not showing anything we can do safely for any of the right reasons. We're showing it because we get greedy in these instances and we value competitive advantage over pretty much everything else in these spots.
We do, and we saw that earlier, you know, this season when it comes to college football, when it came to releasing names or trying to figure out, oh, we don't want to tell you who's in, you know, infected or how many people, because the first thing that came out of the coach's mouth was competitive advantage instead of, oh, we're trying to protect the student athlete from the experiences of others, especially if they don't know who's exposed and you're supposed to go line up against them, you know, every day. So there are a lot of competing intentions. I do think that this can happen safely. I just hope, as much as we are pushing for fans to be out there, we should push to make sure that when they are out there, they're doing so as safe as possible. Because look, when you have a big arena, a big stadium, everyone can walk in together, but that doesn't mean everyone's gonna like make sure they stay where they need to. So as long as we enforce that, to me, I feel more comfortable.
And that's been the difficult part, is seeing the way it's been sometimes enforced, sometimes not. We all see and watch and kind of take anecdotal note of what's happening in the crowds of all these games. Like, Chinee, it's the experience I have now based on the world we've had to live in for the last 6 or 7 months, whatever it's been, of like, even when I watch an old movie and I see people go to hug or in crowds, I'm like, oh, you guys, be careful, like, do all this. But now we're seeing it again in real time. Like, you used to be able to know, was I watching 2019 tape or 2020 by were there people in the stands? That line's going to start to get blurred now in this instance. And again, I don't think it's because we had a gradual process put in place, one that was communicated, one that we can understand. Again, communication in this, it seems to be a direct call and response of, we don't like the way this is affecting what's going on the field, and so now we would like it to change.
Now, do you think that what's happening with the Raiders, because I know we hear often, you know, oh, this player has been, you know, tested positive for COVID, or this group of players or this team, however it's been. We've heard that for a couple months now in sports. But for me, this Las Vegas Raiders situation actually is more interesting based on what is happening with an entire offensive line. Are you like sort of flagged that as a red flag, a concern potentially moving forward, if these guys were exposed and were positive, this could actually put someone in a tougher position, especially a quarterback that is dealing with maybe option 6, 7, or 8 when it comes to protection?
Yeah, this is one of the original scenarios people talked about, Chinee, when we talked about bringing football back, was what if you lose a whole position group, even to contact tracing in this? Now, we know for the NFL, that's less of an issue because you've got daily testing, because you've got all the tweaks to testing to make it even more effective in the league, as we've seen positive cases pop up. So they're going to get answers. But to me, this is a realization of one of the very early fears that we had with a group that is together a lot, that is very close to the defensive line on the field, as we start to worry about how these things manifest themselves in a 2020 season. So it's a lot of the difficulties that we imagined coming to light. It's a lot of the difficulties that Major League Baseball had to deal with at the start of their season, and yet we sit here and now getting ready to watch the World Series take place, Game 2 coming up later tonight. So as we try and see the NFL get there, coming up next, we'll talk to someone who is on the call for the series that is going now, the pinnacle of Major League season, and an earned victory for them after dealing with a 2020 unlike any other. We'll get set up with that next. It's Chinee and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinee and Golic Jr., the podcast.
A big outing and a big night.
Oh, no, no, no. You will not hijack this segment because I've been waiting all show for it.
I'm
I am
sorry.
So excited.
It was a knee-jerk reaction. I just clicked into it.
Because Junior, he tried to, you know, do it covertly. You are now outnumbered. Chinay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Chinay Ogwumike out of Stanford University. Mike Golic Jr. out of Notre Dame. Now, earlier in the show, Jess Mendoza, you heard her cheer. We had Chase Claypool of the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the Fighting Irish, on here. But now I've got my girl with me. I'm so excited. But first, we are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Now, World Series Game 2 tonight. Chinay and Golic Jr. reminding you that the World Series is on ESPN Radio right after this, presented by AutoZone. Catch all the action tonight at 7:30 Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. And as I said earlier, I've got my girl with me, Jess Mendoza, ESPN MLB analyst. She's on the call with Dan Schulman and Chris Singleton for Game 2 in the World Series. Jess, more importantly, don't we always rock for the Nerd Nation, Cardinal Nation here?
Okay, so first of all, I have like my Stanford, like, but it's like my workout, like total, like, and I wanted to like get decked out, but I had to actually do television today. But literally, like, my tank top, I was like, wait, no. I get to go in with Chinay. Like, this is, like, I'm so going to come in, like, if I get a dress like the tree and been absolutely obnoxious.
I have to ask you guys that question, though. Like, seriously, you guys rock with the tree as a mascot. Like, we used to come and play you guys in Palo Alto all the time, and I'd see the tree on the sideline, and he's got this weird, like, are you guys cool with the tree as the mascot?
You know what we did in Notre Dame, right? Like, the whole, like, I probably shouldn't say this, like, on air, of, like, the halftime show and why we're banned from, like,
ever. That is true. We do have some beef.
We dress like potatoes, like our entire band, and then we all were famished. And
cold-blooded.
No wonder. That's where your beef started, right, Junior?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Listen, this is deep-seated stuff right here. And because every time we did go out to Palo Alto to play you guys, I had to remember how beautiful Palo Alto was and how cold South Bend was.
Well, I was going to say how good we were at football, but it's okay. We'll take that, too.
Yeah, that certainly works as well. Jessica Mendoza with us here, who in addition to being a fantastic Stanford Cardinal alum, an Olympian, so many great things, is also on the call with us here on ESPN Radio for the World Series. Game 2 going off tonight. But Jess, I want to look back quickly at Game 1. Looking at Clayton Kershaw, all the pressure that we know narrative-wise is always going to be on him. To see the way he performed in this outing, going out and dealing for so much of this game, how much of a weight do you think is lifted off his shoulders, even knowing all he's accomplished already?
Yeah, I think for sure. He knows the narrative. It's the constant conversation. I think there were two things. One, I mean, he got through that first inning because he kind of felt like when he wasn't landing his breaking ball, runners are getting on base, like they were making a lot of contact, not a whole lot of swing and miss early in that game. It's like, here we go. Here's the narrative. Here it comes. I think the key was him not coming back in the seventh inning. And there's been so much debate. Why didn't you bring him back in? Only 78 pitches, 50% swing and miss. That's the mistake that Dave Roberts has made year in and year out. And this is where they've evolved. Let's not push the envelope here. We've got dudes in the bullpen. Let's bring out someone else in the seventh. So guess what? He can go home tonight and be like, I'm pitching and dealing in the postseason.
Here with Jess Mendoza, MLB analyst here on Chinay and Golic Jr. Looking forward to World Series Game 2 tonight. She'll be on the call. Now, Jess, you know when you say bring out the talent, I mean, I loved watching Mookie Betts Game 1. Can you sort of explain and break down his greatness besides giving tacos? I said this earlier, because you get tacos anytime there's a stolen base.
That's a real thing. I love the way, by the way, you just like, I love Mookie Betts. Like, there was like a deep, like, I think we need to tap into that later. Just like,
you're right.
Like, because, you know what? He is, it's so exciting to see because it's crazy. He comes from Boston. He won a World Series. It's not like he's coming from a no-name team, but it also shows you the level of fandom when you're playing for a team that's in LA. I mean, we've seen Fernando Mania and just all the different things from the 80s on of like guys that can rake and do stuff within a Dodger uniform and how that just explodes. What's crazy to me, though, is how like people realized last night that he was playing for the Dodgers. Like,
oh, God.
Like, they didn't know. Like, there was so much reaction. Like, wait, Mookie's not a Red Sox? Like, just to show you how little baseball gets paid attention to until October.
Well, and especially this year, Jess, and I'm curious, like, your view of this season, because we know the sports calendar all kind of got condensed into a lot of this. And so we know for Dodgers fans, and I heard a lot from our analysts, how people in Los Angeles who may have heard and seen Mookie's greatness in a Red Sox uniform, seeing day to day the things that he's done in this organization all season, but to do what he's done in the midst of this pandemic shortened season and all that's got, I mean, how difficult has it been for these players to try and balance everything that's gone on in this?
Yeah, I mean, you take away their routine, and I would say for any sport, like every sport, of course, but of any sport, baseball is such a routine. There's so much time. Get to the field 7 hours before the game. You have your batting practices when you stretch, all those things. All that got taken away. And so to see players, and then let alone the pandemic, let alone quarantine, let alone like the bubble that they're living in, separation from their family, like you name it. We all know it, right? So for these players to still perform, knowing how mentally taxing this year has been for just us regular people, let alone trying to go and prove that your $360 million is worth it.
Yeah.
And Mookie Betts, I think what stands out the most to me, though, is I'm an outfielder. Just watching him save games defensively. Remember like how you hide hitters in corner outfield positions?
Oh, yeah.
So to see him, not in center field, but in right field and be as good as he is, has been amazing.
Now, speaking of the billing, because everyone's running the numbers, 100 million versus 28 million or so. I'm in LA right now, Jess. So we always talk about the glitz and the glamour of Los Angeles sports versus what we're seeing here with the Tampa Bay Rays, like more so the grind, the team aspect. What do the Rays have to do to be able to even up the series tonight?
I mean, it's all in game two for me, just because it's a bullpen game. This is where the advantage of the Rays, because they have that extra day and everyone's like, it's 24 hours. What's the big deal? It's huge when you're talking about being able for the Rays to line up all their guys the way they want to. The Dodgers bullpen, a bullpen game for them, this is the time that they can take advantage. And for the Rays, it's got to be early in the game because that's when they're so good. When they have a lead, and it could be 1-0, 2-1, then you see the horses come out of the bullpen. And nobody seems to be able to get to them, but they have to get that lead against a guy like Tony Gonsolin and knowing that this is a bullpen game and not Walker Buehler or Clayton Kershaw.
And so on the other side of that then, Jess, the Rays trying to get back into this. For the Dodgers, who are trying to get over a big-time hump here and who know they're going to need everyone, and they got all hands on deck last night, is there a Dodger player? We're all going to focus on Kershaw. We're all going to focus on Mookie Betts. Who you think their success is going to be the most pivotal from here on out in the series as they try and maintain this momentum?
Cody Bellinger. We forget, you know, obviously MVP last year. He's hit a home run in game one and game seven, so it seems like he's rolling. He can get into a funk pretty quick, and we've seen that happen, except they've got so many guys in this lineup. Remember, he's hitting six in this lineup. Dave Roberts had to move him down because of the holes that he's got in his swing, the way that that can be shown, and when he is hitting, because there's so much given to the top of this lineup that when you can get your number six hitter to do Cody Bellinger and do Cody Bellinger things, that's the difference when the Dodgers go to a whole nother level.
Jessica Mendoza, our own ESPN MLB analyst. Jess, we know you are booked and busy. You came off of the ESPNW Summit. You're going to go on the call for Game 2 in the World Series tonight. But I just want to say thank you and commend you because you made history as the first woman to serve as a National World Series game analyst on any platform. So keep blazing the trail, sis.
Hey, you too, girl. Seriously, we're all doing this.
What is it? Do I break out the High School Musical? We're all in this together.
Janae can't help but sing on each and every show that we have. Jess is gonna add the dance moves.
I can dance. I can't sing, but I love singing. But if we could like choreograph like something ahead of time, I would love to just do a duet with you.
So we've actually unofficially started Glee SPN on this show, so we would be delighted if you joined our group here.
Perfect.
So
yeah, she's our choreographer.
Absolutely.
I'll bring the salsa.
All over it. You can hear that and more tonight on The Call with Singleton, Dan Shulman. Yeah, World Series Game 2. I'm all flummoxed and just trying to think of song lyrics now in all of this. Jess, have a great call tonight. We appreciate the time.
She has
Thank
that effect
you guys.
On people. Come on now.
Go Cards.
She melts hard.
All right, we got to get all this Stanford Cardinal love out of here in a hurry now. But coming up next, speaking of alma maters, someone's alma mater may be turning their back on them right now. We'll tell you who next. It's Shanae Golick Jr. on ESPN
Number
Radio.
Two.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Golic Jr., we might be at a truce because let me outline it for you right here. Chase Utley, former Dodger World Series champ, he took us inside the mindset of the Dodgers today, which we're really grateful for. Chase Claypool, Pittsburgh Steeler wide receiver out of Notre Dame, gave us the verdict, and that's your one point, on the Mapletron nickname. Now our own Laura Rutledge also joined us, ESPN NFL Live host, as someone who covered Tua Tagovailoa at Bama. She gave us really profound insight and perspective on Miami's decision naming him as a starter in the big picture, considering all the communication errors there. And of course, Jess Mendoza, our own ESPN MLB analyst, who's on the call for the World Series. Stanford great. Okay, that's my one point, which is why we're at the truce. We're both even. Who's on the call tonight in the World Series game two, who really gave us a unique aspect of Mookie Betts' game that really needs to be appreciated. Jess, she joined us in studio, and I love all the passion she brings, like makes us fall in love with the sport each and every day, because she always gives us the straight talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And most importantly, Jess, she gives us the right energy we need.
Exact right energy. Outside, listen, you can't hold everyone's alma mater against them. You and Jess have done a great job overcoming coaching and what happened at your alma mater, and you have now flourished as postgrad. So I'm proud of both of you.
And you have too. We're both in this. Oh, wait, should I do it again? We're all in this together.
You know what? In the interest of us all being in this together, too, we want to remind everybody, because even though we at times have had beef with our neighbors to the north in Spain and Fitz, Jason Fitz and Sarah Spain, our fine co-hosts here, got a great one to look forward to tonight. Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians going to be joining them at 7:15 Eastern. Ooh. You're going to want to check that one out. Certainly, Kangle wearing one of the best in the business and one who's at the center of it right now. Big time win for them coming off the Green Bay Packers this weekend. So a lot to look forward to with that one. But Chiney, now that we have hit our quota of notable alumni from our school, now that we've hit a truce here, is trying to ramp the energy back up.
Let's go.
We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy levels was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Chiney and Golic Jr.
And Chiney, since we're talking about alma maters, we might want to start here. SportsCenter tweeted out at 2:30 this afternoon, LSU has banned Odell Beckham Jr. from its football facilities for 2 years related to the NCAA's investigation into improper booster payments to its football players, first reported by Sports Illustrated. Now, this goes back to him for giving $2,000 to players after the championship. We remember the notable scene on the field, Odell breaking off hundreds from a wad and handing them off to guys like Justin Jefferson that we're seeing on ESPN News right now. Chiney, cold world out here, a 2-year ban from the alma mater.
Was that a loan? Like, if we consider it a loan that they can pay back, would that mean he wouldn't be banned? Because I understand you don't want to jeopardize the nature of college athletics, right? I get it. But do you realize that what makes people even want to go to LSU is by seeing him do those type of things? Not saying he should have, but being in the locker room, being with the guys, showing them love. I mean, he showed it financially, but like that to me seems a little not good.
And Odell Beckham Jr. not being able to return to LSU's breaking moves, which is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. Now, when you say not good, Chiney, do you mean on LSU's part or on another part in this?
Is it weird if I say on LSU? Like, I get it. I get that he's not supposed to do that. But at the same time, he is showing his alma mater love. But I feel like probably they know something we don't.
Well,
so,
Chiney, I also look at the situation and say it was avoidable. This feels like when rappers snitch on themselves in songs, like Odell making a show of this on the field. I watched this in real time and I'm like, what are you doing, man? Like, I think these guys should get paid too, but you're going to do it out in the open like this and
you're
get
right.
them in trouble. It didn't have to be this way, but
Odell, thought we were never going to mention Tekashi on this show.
How, wow. You know what? We aren't going to. You mentioned him. I never brought that
you
up.
You said snitching on yourself.
You
I knew that was coming.
To see it. You also hate to see this. Odell Beckham Jr., again, this is the Odell Beckham Jr. Keep That Same Energy edition. A tweet tweeted out earlier today. I saw this from Mary Kay Cabot, who does a great job covering the Cleveland Browns. Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't think COVID-19 is, quote, going to enter his body. It's a mutual respect. Huh? What? Chiney, do you want to explain it? Should I explain it?
You want to try? Go ahead and try.
Listen, I have a lot of mutual respect, I like to believe, with the ice cream community. Me and ice cream understand each other. We get along really well. We've got a storied history in all of this. Ice cream enters my body all the time, so I don't think mutual respect is going to be enough to keep people out in this instance. I think social distancing and mask wearing and washing your hands and listening to the CDC protocols is probably the way to go.
Agreed. Should I try to, like, figure out what he was trying to say? Because, like, maybe he understands that we're all in situations now where a lot of people, essential workers are the ones that are putting themselves on the line. And they're the ones who have the respect not only for us, but for our loved ones and for themselves by doing everything possible, even staying away from their loved ones for this reason of fighting the virus. That is mutual respect. not your type, OBJ.
Yeah. Just not a great day to be Odell Beckham Jr.
Is there any good OBJ news?
Not at this point. I mean, he is still young, very well paid, a quality wide receiver when he's on the field for the Cleveland Browns. All these things are still true. He's enjoyed, I think, his best year as a Brown so far. So all those things seem positive.
All right, let's talk Bachelorette. Tell me how you feel.
You know, I think I'm kind of getting over Claire at this point. A lot of really intense dates last night. A lot of oversharing maybe in some of these instances. Former offensive lineman who is a candidate on the show, I think showed better for himself than I talked about with his previous faux pas in one of their lines. But we are finally getting to the crux of the conflict here for everyone getting ready to watch. So this may still end up being the most shocking season of The Bachelorette ever. And as Mina Kimes said on NFL Live, it still doesn't hold a candle to the Dallas Cowboys. Spain and Fitz next.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.